Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Dog Works Radio. I am calling in from Willow, Alaska, the mushing capital of the world. And on the other line, we have Michelle calling in from our world headquarters, Denver, Colorado. How are you, Michelle?
I'm enjoying my afternoon. Just a little bit of a brag. You know, when you are self-employed, you get to set your own hours and decide who you're going to deal with and who you're not going to deal with. And I get to sit and do this wonderful radio show while suntanning my white legs in the beautiful Denver sun.
Well, that's a picture, I tell you what. So I thought you guys were pretty stormy there in Denver this weekend.
The thunderstorms roll in and they roll right back out, and then we get to enjoy a beautiful, sunny, warm afternoon. I mean, we were raining an hour ago, and the temperature was about 72. Now we're up to 88 with a light breeze, and, you know, you just got to love Denver for that. And you know, honey, I know that you know the sight of my beautiful white legs, but nobody else does.
Well, you know, today we have probably our most recurring guest ever on Dog Works Radio. We have Sid Corpy on. But before we introduce her and our fourth round of the Petlitzer Prize, I do want to let all of our listeners know that there is an updated Blog Talk Radio studio now. It looks exactly like a radio screen does at a real radio station. So I guess they're coming up in the world. And the reason I mention this is there's all sorts of different ways that you can interact with us now, including the chats and the call-ins and all that. And I want to give some information out real quick before we do introduce Sid. We have a guest call-in, so you can call in and ask questions. We get those occasionally. The number is 877-552-3889. 877-552-3889. And with that, you can call us in and chat with us and even ask some questions on whether it's this show or any upcoming shows. We're here just about every week on Dog Works Radio. So without further ado, a good friend of ours calling in from the Twin Cities of Minnesota, Sid Corpy. Hi, how are you? We were very fortunate to spend some time with you when we came out about a month ago to visit you and I want to thank you very much for your hospitality and the wonderful lunch there at your home and such a gracious guest for sure, or a gracious host for us as guests. So, Sid, what are you talking about today?
Well, I could go into detail about Mike's scaly white legs, too, if you'd like, Michelle, because I got the same situation going on here, blinding over low-flying planes, you know, the pilots, the glare, you know, it's bad. But but otherwise, I want to thank you guys, too. You were phenomenal coming from all over the United States for a premiere of a movie I was in, Attack of the Moon Zombies. We'll go into that more later. But that it was just so wonderful, and it just bolstered the energy of everybody there to know that folks like you cared enough and were crazy enough to come that far for that event. It was wonderful.
You know, the reason that we were up there for our listeners is we were talking about a book project that's going to be coming out pretty soon, and I want to let everybody know that Sid Corpy is just not a B-movie horror movie star, but she's also a very, very accomplished editor as well as author, and she wrote a book called Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss, and I tell you guys, that is a book that is a must read in that time of all of our lives when we do lose our pets. So let's talk a little bit about Good Grief. before we go much further, Sid.
Okie dokie. What do you want to know?
Well, you know, tell our listeners what it's about. Can they still buy it online? What's the status of the book world these days? You know, you hear so many things on the news with Barnes & Noble going out of business, or Borders going out of business, and Barnes & Noble struggling, and everything being on the Kindle and the Nook and the iPad and all that sort of stuff. How are people reading books these days? And if they are reading that way, can they get your book in that manner?
Well, they can get it in the flesh, all over the place, actually, online on my website at www.goodgriefpetloss.com, or on Amazon.com, or in Barnes & Noble, or even they can request it from their library. It's all over the place. And I have a feeling that my particular subject matter is very high touch. It's not high tech, and I don't think the first thing people think of when they need comfort from something like this is, you know, to read it on a Kindle. I mean, it's available in that manner, but that hasn't been the way it's gone out, really.
Right.
The book itself is, you know, kind of documenting my entire journey to get from a place where I was losing everybody I loved in a short amount of time, my mother, stepfather, uncle, three dogs, two cats, cockatiel, and 15-year marriage all went kaput in like 4 or 5 years. And you have to get a better relationship with death and loss, or you just don't keep going on after that much loss. So the book was the result of that journey. And I opened it up when I was writing it to people literally all over the globe to share their stories about the unique animal bond that they had, and how they ended up coping, how they memorialized their pets, and so forth. It's, the book covers everything. It's comprehensive. It gets you ready for making the decision. It gives you preparation methods to deal with people who just don't get it and who treat you like you're a little bit nuts because you're hurting over this loss of a friend. And then on to even stories of afterlife connections, methods of memorializing them, going on to even discussing different religious and philosophical stances on the subject of pet loss. You know, just to really appeal to everything from mental to emotional to, you know, intellectual, all the way through the whole process of grief. And I have recently, you know, you talked about your brag on about your tanning exploits, Michelle, but I recently was awarded my fourth literary award from the Green Book Awards, and it, one of my favorite ones that it took was, it was named Best Book of the Year for 2010 in the self-help category. So it's not just an animal and pet book. There's a lot in there that helps you just in general to navigate loss, because, you know, let's face it, pet loss is a form of disenfranchised grief because our society on the whole doesn't validate it. And when you're going through that, too oftentimes you're going through it alone, or people are just avoiding you. They just don't have the patience with it that you may need for your support. And so this was a chance to, you know, let people know it is valid and they're not crazy for feeling that strongly over the loss of an animal family member.
And you're so right, Sid. In today's world, our pets, they're our children, and we see it so often in our dog training school where sometimes even pets are replacing children. In, you know, today's busy world, it's very common for a family or a couple to have a couple of dogs or a couple of cats, and those are their children. They act as if they're members of their family, and it is a tremendous amount of grief that does go on when a pet passes away, and your book hits the spot. It does exactly what it's supposed to do, and I know firsthand that what you say in that book really helps people out.
Thank you so much. That's been my hope, and I'm knocking on wood, that's been the feedback that I've gotten for it. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. And you know, with your your delve into the literary world, that's where we came up with the Pulitzer Prize. And mm-hmm. today is round four, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. We have three stories to read, the winners of the Pulitzer Prize for this round. But before we do so, we do have to talk about Attack of the Moon Zombies. And like you mentioned...
naturally.
Yes.
Doesn't everyone?
Yes, of course. Michelle and I, we trekked all over the country to attend this premiere. Christopher R. Mim, he's pretty much the man behind the madness of these films, and it has to be some of his best work. And we were there at the premiere at right around Memorial Day, the Thursday before there. Right. So I know you had a huge starring role in Attack of the Moon Zombies as Administrator Ripley, and I know you have some screenings coming up, and you're promoting the heck out of it on Twitter and Facebook and the whole social media thing. Tell us a little bit about Attack of the Moon Zombies.
Well, this is Christopher R. Mim's sixth foray into the, and now I have to kind of come at a running start because this is long, the black and white 1950s drive-in style creature feature B-movie. Yeah, that's what he makes, and that's all he makes, and he does it well. He's like single-handedly keeping alive this little slice of Americana that, you know, is slowly being killed off, you know, the drive-in movies. And it's something that a great many of us grew up knowing, you know, you'd stay awake for Horror Incorporated or whatever your local spooky movie show was, and you'd see these cheesy things and, you know, The Fly and The Thing and The Creature from the Black Lagoon, and they're just wonderful classics. Now, if you look at them in terms of today's movies, okay, no, there's not a lot of computer-generated imagery and not a lot of super high-tech things, and maybe the pacing feels a little slower than we're used to now because our attention spans are dwindling. But he has done a wonderful job of creating a hybrid between the two worlds. Yes, it's very low-tech. Even lower budget. The entire movie was filmed for about $3,000 in Christopher Mim's basement near a stinky cat box. And it's because, you know, everybody just loves it so much and gets behind the project that he can get some pretty decent talent to just come and say, I'll work for free, please, just let me be in this movie. You know, and not including myself, I'm talking about people like Mike Cook and Shannon McDonough and stuff like that, my co-stars. And it was just a joy to be part of that. I mean, I had seen one of his premieres a few years ago of Cave Women on Mars, and I was just instantly hooked. I just said, this is so unbelievably, wonderfully cheesy. I must have something to do with one of these. So,
The rumor is, Sid, not to interrupt, is you pretty much became a groupie and did whatever you could to get in that next film. Is that right?
Groupie's a nice word. I say I stalked him.
So,
I actually just sent him an email and just flat out told him, before I die, I'm going to have something to do with one of your movies. I'll be a prop mistress, a dead body, an extra. I don't care. I'm going to. And I offered up my house for filming because we have a 50s malt shop and on our third floor. And I knew from reading about him that he likes to write his stories to places he knows he has access to for filming. And then I just downloaded a picture of my high school theater trophy as proof I'm talented.
There you go.
And he, you know, he came over with one of the stars of Cave Women on Mars, spent about 3 hours over at our house. We got to know each other, and then a couple movies went by, a couple years went by, and he finally gave me and my husband a one-line cameo in Destination Outer Space, which was last year's movie. And for whatever reason, he bumped us up to bigger speaking roles in this one. And it was kind of fun because he was writing, he had asked me if I wanted to be Dr. Rutherford in the movie. And I said, I don't know anything about the movie, so yeah, sure, I'll be whatever you want. And then I got an email from another of the Mimiverse fans, as we call ourselves, and he wrote me, hey, congratulations on your promotion. And I was like, what are you talking about? What promotion? He said, you got bumped up to one of the leads. And I was, huh? So I look on the site and think, oh, I'm suddenly Administrator Ripley. And, I mean, to me, these are just words because I didn't know anything about it. I was just willing, you know.
Right.
And I think, you know, his wonderful, wonderful wife, Stephanie, was supposed to play Administrator Ripley. And then as Chris was writing the story, the character kind of took off. She was supposed to be a little more peripheral because Stephanie had just had a baby and she was just overwhelmed. She couldn't take on a huge role, the time commitment and everything. And Ripley just started growing in importance and in number of lines. And she just said, I'm not going to try to memorize all that. So why don't you give it to Sid? And so we like swapped parts. And she was wonderful as Dr. Rutherford. She really was. But I'm forever and ever grateful to her for her largesse and letting me take over that, because I love Ripley, and I changed my hair to have really scary bangs to play her.
Well, you know, people that are listening, they tune into this show to listen to stories about dogs. And we had Chris Mim on, I don't know, right before the premiere, and we've had Halloween shows and all sorts of other shows other than dogs. And you know, Sid, Michelle, those are our most popular shows. So I don't know if we're in the wrong topic area or what we're talking about, but people love when we're talking about this kind of goofy stuff like Attack of the Moon Zombies and A Christmas Story and all that sort of stuff. So if you are listening, we are a dog show. We are dog trainers. We have a dog author on.
Four dogs.
she has four now, Westies. So we are a dog show. So before we get into Petless Surprise, I think Michelle has a point to make. Michelle?
You know, it does fall right into the genre and topic of the show, because Sid's four beautiful Westies are featured in the Moon Zombie film. Because if
they
I
are
recall,
associate producers.
They are, but I also recall seeing a photo of them in his home, also in the movie.
Yes. Oh, he lets us bring little touches from home and
yes.
decorating.
And
I
thought that was such a nice little reality touch to the film.
Yeah.
Because if anybody knows you, they know your dogs, and they'll recognize the photo in the movie. And I thought, you know, that was just really cool. He didn't just use, you know, regular old filled frames with the advertisement to buy the photo frame.
Mm-hmm.
Photos. That was very cool. So.
Thank you so much. And I'm sworn to secrecy, but our dogs will be playing an even more important role in his next movie.
Ooh,
but
next?
I can't say any more than that.
Possibly next May, then. We might have to get those frequent flyer miles out already to plan a trip. So let's get into today's topic, the Petlitzer Prize. But before we do, let's take a quick break. I want to have your spot played about this so we can give a quick summary of what that's all about, and we'll come right back with the winners of round four. So we'll be right back.
Whether you're a Schnauzer Shakespeare or a Hound Dog's Hemingway in the making, perk up your ears. Dog Works Radio is teaming up with animal chaplain Sid Corfee, author of the award-winning book, Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss, in presenting the Petlitzer Prize Contest, the Pet-Related Writer's Pulitzer. Animal lovers can showcase their creative writing abilities for nifty awards and for the chance to have their works read live on DogWorks Radio. Categories range from poetry to short stories to persuasive essays and more. For more information, visit the blog page at www.goodgriefpetloss.com and click on the Petlitzer Prize link.
And that is it. We're talking about the Petlitzer Prize with Miss Sid Corpy today on DogWorks Radio. Sid, we're in all the way into round four. I guess this has been going on for close to a year now. Let's talk about what the topics are. I know each time that we do one of these rounds that we have a particular theme. So what type of themes have we had already, and what is the theme of round four?
Well, we started with pet-related poetry. And then we did short stories and persuasive essays. And this time we wanted them to write short stories from a prompt. And everyone was instructed to start out with, it was a dark and stormy night.
Right.
Then they could take it anywhere their imaginations told them. They were not restrained into, you know, making it a horror movie or something like that. But it was just a starting off point for them to jump in there. We got some very diverse answers or responses as a result of that.
So this is a true writing contest, and I know you've talked about it before, where a lot of times for these types of contests, you can pay publishers to be in a book for your poem or whatever, just to see your name in print. But this is an honest-to-goodness writer's contest. So what is it all about, and how did it come about?
Well, after I had won one of my awards for my book, I knew how much that bolstered my confidence. Whether, you know, it translates into sales or not, I will never know. But it's a real shot in my own arm to have won that. And I thought, I'd like to extend that to other people. And I have, you know, a 25-year background in editing, writing, journalism, proofreading, the whole thing. So, and being a former English teacher, too. So I didn't think it was too much of a stretch to have me be someone who could evaluate writing. And I just thought, you know, if I open this up and I let people who love animals write about one of their favorite topics, which is their pets, that might be a fun thing. And then the name Pulitzer Prize popped into my head to be like the pet writer's Pulitzer. And it just kind of grew from that. And you've been such a magnificent partner and champion of all of this. I thank you both so much, and you're my co-judges. And a lot of times we agonize over, you know, who to pick and how to rank, and can't we give them all first prize, and, you know, all of that.
Right. So we're into round four now, and you said that it was a topic that we gave to the writers, and it was a dark, stormy night. So how did people start to evolve with this? I know I remember in junior high school English class, or language arts as it was called in junior high, we had to write themes. And with that, they would give us a topic or a subject matter, and we would have to write about it, whatever it was. And often it turned into so many different types of writing. Mm-hmm. And I do it every day. When I write a blog topic, I will pick something that happened, a theme of the day, and I'll write about it. It's not one particular topic about dogs or mushing or something else. It's just something that happened during the day, and I'll write some kind of quippy, sarcastic blog post about it. So with that, do you think that particular topic or subject matter for this round was more difficult than writing poetry or short stories or essays?
Well, I had expected it to be, you know, actually very freeing, but I think you're right. Some people thought there might have, or I can't imagine what they thought exactly, but I am guessing some people thought that they had to constrain themselves, actually, when in fact this was meant to be take it as far as you want. You know, you could have written sci-fi for us, you could have written horror, you could have written comedy. It didn't matter, just, you know, giving them a thought spot to start from. But you just never know what will appeal to people and what will trigger their creativity.
So let's get right into it. We always read the winners on DogWorks Radio, and we welcome the listeners to listen in and comment. And you can always follow us on Twitter and Facebook and just about anywhere else on social media. Just look up Sid Corby or DogWorks Radio, and you can find us right on there. So let's talk about the third place winner. It was so hard to pick these guys because they were all very good, and we don't say that lightly. We're very diligent in what we do in order to pick the winners. So third place does not mean third best. It means that yours was ranking to be in the top three, and that's a very important honor, isn't it?
Absolutely, because if they weren't good enough to make it into that cut, you know, we wouldn't have even had the contest. We'd just say, well, we had to cancel because there wasn't anything good enough. And
right,
that was
right.
Not the case. So we were very, very grateful of the people who submitted and did wonderful work.
So let's read the third place. Who is that by,
third
and what's the topic?
It is by Kathy Dutilly. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. She is from Jeffersonton, Virginia, and her piece is untitled. It was a dark and stormy night, and my humans looked just a bit silly, crouched down on their knees, peering under the bed, trying to comfort me, obviously thinking that I was afraid and hiding out because of the storm. I think sometimes they forget that I'm feral-born and quite accustomed to the elements. I know that not only will the rain nourish the earth, but it also provides quite nice puddles of water for ferals less fortunate than I have been. It is nights such as these that take me back to the old building I lived in with my mom and siblings. We would huddle together for warmth, and my mom would wash the dirt of the day off us one by one. She taught us how to find the best spots to stay warm and dry, and when the rain would stop and the sun would shine, we would tumble outside for a little roughhousing in the grass. Life seemed good, and I am forever grateful to have had the experiences that I did, because now I know how much better it can be with humans who have made me part of their family and have washed the dirt of the day off me for good. I only wish that we could have all gotten out, but only the young are taken and brought to loving homes like this one. For the older cats, like my mom, it's too late in their development to be socialized to people. But thanks to humans like mine, I know that my mom and others like her in my colony are well cared for, and that there will be no more babies born into the feral existence. She and the colony are free to enjoy their lives, knowing there will be a meal at the end of the day from people who will not hurt them. Hay is provided in the wintertime to ensure their warmth, and if anyone needs special care, there will be help for them as well. Sometimes, after they've gone to visit and feed my mom in the colony, they will come home and tell me how she is. They've even brought me a picture of her from time to time. Sounds silly to you, I'm sure, but my humans are much more evolved than most, and I believe that, and they believe that I understand what they are telling me. I do. I understand so much more than they could ever guess. We all do, you know. I am forever grateful to them for loving me enough to love my colony family. Sorry, I have someone calling through here on my line. For making me feel as important to them as I was to my own mom, and most of all, for understanding that it is people who have caused the sad existence of feral colonies, and it is people who must be responsible for stopping the birth of hundreds and thousands more. Ah, such digression from the point of my story. For some reason, these dark and stormy nights do cause me to become quite maudlin. Perhaps it's because my humans love me so much, they are willing to risk looking quite silly just to make me feel better. Now they seem to be performing some type of stupid human tricks, thinking it will entice me to leave my very warm nest. But I think we all know how absolutely cozy the slippers of someone we love can be on such a night. It is one of my favorite things ever to snuggle in with something that smells like the humans I love best. Snuggling deeper. A different scent has just wafted past my keen feline sniffer. Wait a minute. Is it? Can it be? Yep, treats. Oh, fine. Languidly, I open my eyes. I stretch. I yawn, and out I go so they can comfort me. Did I mention that life really is good?
And who was that by, Sid?
That was Kathy Dutilly, and I apologize for my call waiting beep. I don't know how to turn that off.
That's okay, no problem. You know, that story, we had a guest on last week, and we talked about animal actors. And, of course, in today's movie worlds, all of the animals have speaking parts, whether it's with CGI or whatever. We've really humanized our pets and our you know, cats, dogs, horses, everything. And I love it when people can tell the story from a different point of view, and in this case, in the cat's point of view. So I thought this was a great story. It was almost kind of a public service announcement where we're talking mm-hmm. about feral cats and, you know, rescues and that sort of thing. And there are so many good people out there that do take care of all of these abandoned animals, whether they're cats or dogs. So I really like this one. Michelle, what did you think about this story?
You know, I think it was really fun and great. It was descriptive, and I like descriptive stories because I don't want to just hear wah, 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 nah, nah, nah. I want to be taken to the same place that the writer is trying to convey.
Right.
I think it was really, this could have done double duty. This could have been a great entry even for our persuasive essay contest previously, because she really did have a point to make. So it went beyond just short story to something that, you know, was meant to open eyes and have people, you know, do some thinking.
Absolutely. So a great entry. Congratulations for your third place, and we look forward to having you submit again in upcoming rounds. You can submit as many times as you like, and we look forward to reading your guys' stuff in the near future. So let's go to the second place winner, Sid.
It is from Liz Hartman of Merritt Island, Florida. And she said about herself, "I love my cats, and my gato is 22 years old."
Oh, my
and
goodness.
Yes, that's someone who's been well-loved and cared for to make it to that age, and many more years to you, gato. Her story is called The Thug and the Cat Carrier. It was a dark and stormy night, and my cat was hunkered down in the windowsill watching the thunder and lightning through eyes as big as the tops of tuna cans. How, I wondered, would my pampered house cat react to his first airplane ride and being ushered into the body of a large winged thing? My cat is not your ordinary cat. His name is Thug. Why? He has been pushy and arrogant since he was a kitten, and he has not mellowed with the passage of time. However, he does have his moments of love and affection for me when he hears the can opener. I have learned to live with Thug's likes and dislikes because he has learned to live with mine. We live harmoniously in a home with various hiding places to accommodate Thug's disappearing act when he hears the words vet and annual visit. Close friends invited us both to visit their new home in the country. To ensure an easy transition from house cat to airline passenger, I first spoke with Thug's veterinarian and contacted the airlines. My veterinarian laughed as we discussed Thug encountering an airplane. He was aware of Thug's examining room antics, which consisted of puffed up fur, flattened ears, low guttural growls, and overall bad cat behavior. He said I could ease the transition by using perseverance and patience, and Thug must have time to adapt to the carrier. Under no circumstances should any pushing, shoving, or screaming be allowed by either of us. The airline representative explained a valid shot record, boarding fee, and airline-approved cat carrier would be required. I purchased an approved carrier that could be hand-carried into the airplane and fit comfortably under my seat. I arrived home with the carrier, and Thug greeted me at the door. I patted his head, scratched his ears, and placed the carrier in the living room. Thug began to check out this new addition to his domain. He carefully walked around the carrier, stopping and sniffing every inch of it. He saw me watching and immediately walked away from the carrier, flopped down in his favorite chair, formerly mine, curled up and went to sleep. Thug totally ignored the cat carrier for the next several days, and I was becoming nervous and apprehensive about the upcoming trip. After day 5, Thug and the cat carrier were resting in their respective places, Thug in his chair, the cat carrier still on the floor. I envisioned my well-planned trip disappearing like Thug's favorite cat food. I waited patiently for Thug's curiosity to override his independent attitude. My patience was rewarded as I watched him place one paw into the carrier and slowly inch his body inside. He sniffed and shuffled around, walked out, ignored me, plopped in his chair, and went to sleep. The following day, Thug was noticeably absent. I checked most of his favorite hiding places, but I could not find him. I gave up looking for him, knowing he would grace my presence when he heard the can opener. As a last resort, I looked into the carrier. Thug was sleeping peacefully inside. I reached down and gently scratched his ears and spoke softly to him. My patience and perseverance paid off, and Thug spent the next few days either sleeping in his favorite chair or inside the carrier. Trip preparations began. I finished packing, including Thug's favorite cat toys and food, and went to collect my wonderful cat. I walked to the carrier. It was empty. I called for him, but there was no response. I looked for him, but he was gone. and I knew I would not find him in time to make our flight. I stayed home with Thug, who showed up after I had put the cat carrier away. My friends were disappointed Thug and I would not be visiting. However, I insisted they come and visit with me. I can hardly wait to tell Thug we are having visitors and they are bringing their cat, Spike. Thug may want to look for some new hiding places.
That's a pretty good one, too. Who wrote that one, Sid?
That was Liz Hartman of Merritt Island, Florida.
You know, when I was reading that one, the first thing I thought about was how cats literally beat to their own drum. And that's exactly how I perceive cats, you know, interpreting the world. They're going to do what they want to do when they want to do it. And no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They are not going to do it when somebody else says. As a dog trainer, I would find it so difficult to interact with a cat because pretty much they're just running around giving you the nose in the air treatment all the time and I think that story really tells that characterization of the cat. Michelle, what did you think about Liz's story?
I think that she really nailed her relationship with her cat. They're not easily persuaded. They throw tantrums. They don't come out when you want them to because they know you want them to. And she ended up
teenagers.
Right. She ended up having to alter her entire plans, her entire trip. I'm sure she lost some money, with flight cancellation fees and everything else, all because he wasn't bound and determined to go. Unfortunately, there was probably a few other suggestions that I'm sure some of us savvy dog trainers could have came up for getting the cat to be more comfortable in the crate. But
catnip.
You know.
Sprinkle the bed with catnip.
Yeah.
No, I just really was amazed. I mean, of course, cats have a propensity toward this, but even my darn dogs. If I have a notion in my head that I'm going to want you to do this, all I have to do is look to them or reach for them, and they are scooting away going, I can tell you want something, You know, and yes, if I had well-trained Westies, that wouldn't be the case. But that's neither here nor there. You don't live here to help me. And they're obnoxiously psychic is what they are. They can just tell. If you are in a rush and you've really got to get going, well, that's the time they're going to endlessly chase a squirrel and not come in when you call. You know, whatever. It's so, yeah, I mean, cats have a stronger rap for it, but it does happen with independent-minded terriers, too.
And they do. And just a little side story on our dealings with the obnoxious canine, which is very similar in their characteristics to a cat, is a Siberian Husky. I tell you what, they truly do have cat-like behaviors. And one of the most prominent things that Siberians do is if you let them outside, they are not going to come back until you either chase them down or they decide to come back on their own. Michelle, what do you think about that kind of cat-Siberian relationship?
Well, I agree, but, you know, I have a tendency to be a bit more persuasive than you are with any of our Siberians, and I think that you can attest to that. I can pretty much get them to do whatever I want, but it does come with a lot of high-pitched voice coaxing and the ever-present smell of cheese on my fingers.
Is cheese cheating?
I think cheese is cheating. So that was our second place winner by Liz, and she lives in Florida. So we've got a winner in Virginia and a winner in Florida. So we are a nationwide Pettlitzer Prize submission here this time. So that's very good.
We actually won or had a winner from England.
That's right. I remember.
So all
I remember
over
that.
The globe. It's awesome.
That is great. And folks, if you're thinking about submitting and you do want us to read them on the air, you know, this isn't, audiobook central here. We're doing the best that we can. But even if you're in England or Australia, New Zealand, wherever, you can hear DogWorks Radio all over the world, and we are streaming on live on Blog Talk Radio as well as iTunes. So you can find your reading just about anywhere. So let's talk about the grand prize winner, first place. Who is that by?
This is by Elaine Garley of Animal Bridges. She's an animal communicator in Minneapolis, in my hometown.
There you go.
And her piece is also untitled. It was a dark and stormy night, and my puppy was on his first camping trip in northern Minnesota. Just hours ago, my husband, Teddy Bear, the 10-week-old Wheaton Terrier puppy, and I settled in our tent to enjoy the great sleeping weather. After a day of officiating at a white water kayak race, we were ready for some great outdoor sleeping. A slight breeze caused the tent to make flapping noises. Since it was the 1980s, we didn't have access to Doppler radar and had no idea what was headed our way. Around midnight, the tent started rocking from the winds and whipping the flaps. A loud clash of close thunder woke me. A dark and stormy night was at our campsite. The sky lit up with lightning dancing across the sky. Well, I hoped it was dancing across the sky and not touching down on the ground near us. Since we camped in the rain before, I knew we could handle it. Both John and Teddy Bear didn't even react and kept sleeping. Crack! Flashing lightning, and the rain came down in sheets. Oh, no. Reality started to settle in. A huge tent with a metal dog crate in a lightning storm. How wise was that? Yikes, it was time to move. I grabbed the metal crate with Teddy, who was still sound asleep, my pillow, and a blanket. I unzipped the huge door and stepped out under the awning, then zipped the door shut. Was the van unlocked? Crash, bang, clash, lightning flashing. The lightning provided a wonderful lighting so I could see the fire pit. The rain came down in sheets, and we got soaked in the 15 feet to the van. Fortunately, the doors were unlocked, and we settled in for the stormy night. Teddy Bear was calm and cuddly as he slept with his puppy breath in my face. For a 10-week-old puppy, he took everything in stride. This was normal to him. I fell asleep on the hard rubber mat, curled under the blanket. Several hours later, I woke to quiet. The rain stopped. It was a beautiful night with stars shining. I decided to go back to the comfort of a sleeping bag in the tent. I took Teddy Bear out for a quick visit to the woods and went to the tent. I quietly unzipped the door and stepped in. John said quietly, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I want to sleep in the sleeping bag." John laughed. "I'm on the only dry spot in the tent. Go back to the van." So Teddy Bear and I went back to the van and slept until the sun rose. What a great way to spend a dark and stormy night.
Who was that by again?
Elaine Garley.
Of Minneapolis, Minnesota, your hometown, as you spoke. And you know, on this one, I've been there, I've done that. As some of us love camping, others of us hate it for this very reason, is you never know what's going to happen. And that beautiful weekend where you're out there camping with your family can turn into a big nightmare very quickly, whether it's a thunderstorm or whatever, mosquitoes, whatever the case may be. And what I thought was very interesting about that was the Wheaton Terrier, and I've trained many a Wheaton Terriers over the years, and they're also a breed that pretty much just doesn't care. They're going to do what they want whenever they want, and they're going to beat to their own drum as well. And I think that that Teddy knew exactly what was going to happen, and he knew his pet parent was going to take care of him, and I thought that was a great story. Michelle, what do you think about Teddy's story there?
I wouldn't have ventured back out of the van.
Sid, what do you think?
I would have driven to the nearest Super 8.
I take it you ladies do not like camping.
Well, I would just be rather scared, and you know,
right.
I knew. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Michelle. We keep cutting you off.
I enjoy camping, but I'm from California, and when rains come through like that, they warn you about flash flooding. So you don't stick around to find out if you're going to make it out of the creek or not. You leave. So.
Right, yeah.
Right.
And I knew that this one would appeal to you guys, being the outdoorsy folk you are. And, you know, I thought, well, that's a natural for them. And I think, too, what you know, everybody was like a hair's breadth separated. And this, it's so subjective. And, you know, if I had my druthers, you'd all have first place spots. But I think the one thing that may have bumped this just the teensiest bit over was just sort of subliminally influencing us by sticking to a literally dark and stormy night throughout, you know,
right,
and keeping the narrative always tied into that. I think that was just what tipped it just that tiny, tiny, tiny bit. Even though we said it's open to any interpretation, and that's true, like I said, I think it was more a subliminal kind of thing for us.
And when people – go ahead, Michelle.
I agree 100%. It was just that she kind of kept us in that night, you know.
Right. And with this Pulitzer Prize, we have entries from, you know, the gamut of ages. We've had little kids enter as well as, mm-hmm. as you know, adults that have, you know, books published and everything. So we cover it all. So don't be afraid, guys, to enter your work. The only way you're going to find out if it's good is if somebody else reads it and tells you so. And I think that the Pulitzer Prize is one of those things. It may be just, you know, a very simple, you know, pet writing contest, but it truly is a good way for you to get your work out there, get it quote-unquote published, whether it's on the radio or not, and let people find out that this is what you're all about. And that's what writing is all about. And I want you to talk a little bit about that in our last couple of minutes, Sid, is about how people write and how important it is for other people to read it. You know, I'm not talking about journal entries that are private, you know, the little diary with the lock on it and things like that. But if you want to get out there and write, whether it's to write a book or a blog post or, you know, content for your website or whatever, it is imperative that other people read it and tell you whether it's good or bad, right?
Exactly. I mean, with the caveat of everyone's opinion is subjective. So if you have a really strong belief in yourself and somebody disagrees because it's not their cup of tea, what you wrote about or whatever, you can take that then with the proverbial grain of salt. But, yes, you should be getting feedback from other people because we just can't write in a bubble, you know, and we can't, just as we can't proofread our own work because our brains say, oh, this is what I meant to say and I won't catch the typo, having someone else read can point out to us areas that need to be bolstered or a thing that we put in there that we assume everyone understands that really needs some backing up with background information or, you know, things like that. And it's also important, too, to read your own work out loud because even if you don't feel really strong about spelling or punctuation, we're natural hearers of the language. And if you find yourself needing to pause for two or three breaths, chances are you've used a run-on sentence and so forth. So there's all these different ways to improve your writing. That's why people go into writers' groups and, you know, it keeps them on task. They have to have something ready to bring to share with the group and they get the feedback. And, you know, if someone is really seeking to help you, they won't just say marvelous things about your work, nor will they just cut it to shreds. They'll give you a balance of this was what worked, here's what might make it a little better. And honestly, I can't even think of an author that couldn't have somebody come in and say, well, okay, Nabokov, we could edit a little bit about your section of Lolita in this part, you know, and that it can always be tinkered with. You know, writing is never really done, even if it's, you know, put it in a book form or something. Why do people put out new editions? Because they go in and they change things or they make additions and so forth. So, yeah, it's fun. And now the people who win a Pulitzer Prize have legitimate bragging rights and can call themselves award-winning authors. The only difference between us and a lot of these book awards is we haven't charged anybody anything. A lot of the other places, you're paying $50, $100 or more dollars, and you don't know. You might be competing against 18 people, but, you know, they've taken your money and so forth. Or you could be competing against 10,000.
Right, right.
But here, either way, 18 or 10,000, you still haven't laid out any money, and you still are getting sincere evaluative feedback from us. And anybody who's interested in writing about animals really should keep their finger on the pulse of the Pulitzer Prize.
I think it's going to take off. Like you said, we've been in round four now. We do it about every 2.5-3 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
So you have time, guys, to get out there and write your next story. I know we're going to do our next one sometime mid-fall, end of September or
right.
so.
It's just too hard to wrangle people in the summer for things.
Right,
like
and all of us, including all of our writers out there, you know, we're busy in the summer. We have kids and vacations and the whole nine yards, so we're going to take just a little bit of a break before we go into round five. But with that said, have you thought about any topics that, you know, can kind of get the gears going a little bit?
Well, I thought we might revisit our round one, just opening it up to pet-related poetry again, because a lot of people found that really approachable. And if something worked, why not revisit it?
No, a lot of people, when they think of poetry, I think that they think that they have to write this rhyming, prose. What is poetry?
I mean, they certainly can rhyme. It's any piece of writing that's, you know, got good visual specifics. It's intended to move someone emotionally, even if that's, you know, to laughter. It does not have to rhyme. It can rhyme, of course. It usually will have a certain rhythm to it. It may have very creative use of metaphor and simile. It may have alliteration, you know, things that begin with the same sound or something that make it sound different than just reading a regular story. But you can do limericks, you can do haikus, you know, we've had almost a haiku win one of the prizes. And it's just really wonderful to see people they could write something that could suffice as song lyrics, you know, and that's still poetry. So
we're not looking for Dr. Seuss here. We're looking for we're looking for something that you described very eloquently there. It just has to capture the imagination of the topic, and it can be about anything in regards to pets in this pet poetry. I know people ask this a lot, especially new writers. They want to know right off the bat, how many words does it have to be? You know, a lot of times you'll say, okay, it has to be 700 words or 1,000 words, and that's a real, hitting the wall, so to speak. Oh my goodness, it's not 1,000 words. I got to write more. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, with poetry, there's really no limit. I mean, I would imagine you need more than 3 words to make it a poem, but
right.
Maybe your E.E. Cummings, I don't know. We don't need it to be an epic poem like, you know, Homer's The Odyssey or something either. It's just really open to how long you need to complete your thought, your image, your persuasion, whatever it is that you're seeking to create, you'll know. This is the most open with that. With our short stories, we generally say like 400 to 700 words because we want to keep things somewhat balanced among the writers so that when we're reading them, they're fairly close in length, and it just keeps them to a similar constraint and so forth. But with poetry, you know, if you have to go on as long as the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, I guess that's your business.
We only have an hour show, guys, so
yeah,
keep it in the constraint there. And I know Michelle, she writes a lot of poetry, and she's been publishing some of her older poems on her brand new blog, so you can find that right at michellefortot.com. Everybody has websites this day, as well as Michelle. So, Michelle, what do you think about the poetry genre of writing?
Well, I find it the most therapeutic. Because sometimes you just need something quick and to the point and be done with it. And it was the most enjoyable form of writing that I did growing up in school. I found it the most freeing. I also found that it was a good way to jot down a few thoughts that I had that I could come back to and take out of poem form and elaborate on into something else later on if I wanted to. That is why I enjoyed writing poetry. That is why I think so many people enjoy writing poetry. But I also think that poetry is a little bit fearful for some people, same as public speaking can be fearful. They're not so sure that they are capturing the essence of what poetry is because, you know, when we start off in school, we start off learning about William Shakespeare, and that can be quite daunting. You know, poetry isn't cut and dry. It's not, you know, the cow jumped over the moon essentially is a short story, but it also can be considered a poem. And if people get caught up in, you know, it's not a certain style, it's not this, it's not that, then they're not going to enjoy writing poetry. But, you know, all lyrical songs start off as poems. A lot of movies like Christopher R. Mim doing the Moon Zombies, I'm sure some of his stuff starts off in poetry form.
Well, it's really funny there that you would say that, is he has these podcasts called the Mimiverse Bonfire Podcast, and I was his first guest last month, and now Michael Kaiser, who plays so many of his monsters, is the guest this month, and he starts off the section with, "You may know me as a maker of bad movies, but what you might not know is I also write bad poetry." And then he reads something just abysmally bad.
There you go. So it's
for fun.
It's all tied together in the universe, isn't it, Sid?
It always is, yes. And when you were mentioning the kid who won one of the Pulitzer Prizes, Kenna Arndt, she was the daughter of Bob Arndt, who played Dr. Banks, the hugely sexist guy in Attack of the Moon Zombies, the one that you weren't that unhappy to know got his comeuppance, you know.
he's a
great guy.
One who took a bite of the Oreo cookie and put it back.
Oh yeah, how rotten is that?
See, you've got to watch Attack of the Moon Zombies, and I tell you what, guys,
just for that cookie.
if we have about 2 minutes left, but let's do this, Sid. If somebody is dying to watch Attack of the Moon Zombies, all they have to do, I have two copies. All they have to do is be the first two to send me an email on our Facebook page, Dog Works Radio on Facebook, and say, "I am interested in Christopher R. Mim," and I will make sure the first two people get a copy of Attack of the Moon Zombies. I do have two copies, so we're looking forward to it. So guys, get up there and type away on Dog Works Radio on Facebook, and you could own your very own copy of Attack of the Moon Zombies and hear what we're talking about, Mrs. Ripley and the whole nine yards. So let's do that. Sid,
if you happen to be number three or number four, go to SaintEuphoria.com, SaintEuphoria.com, and order your own copy. Or come
only
to our screening.
Only $9.95, I believe, and a couple of bucks shipping, yep. And he gets them out to you really quick. So it's something you got to check out, guys. It's not something you can get on Netflix. It's not something you're going to see at, you know, 2 a.m. on a Saturday morning on cable. This is something that it's going to knock your socks off. So you have to check this out. Sid, it's been a pleasure as always. Let's keep in touch. We'll definitely be back on the air sometime later this fall with round five.
And I think you should have Michelle's poetry peppered in through the summer as inspiration.
There you go.
No. Oh, no.
GoodGriefPetLoss.com is where you can find Sid Corpy, and make sure you follow her on Twitter as well. It's at Sid Corpy. Thank you very much, Sid. We'll talk
to you
soon.
Thank you, guys. Hugs all around. Bye.
Thank you.
Take care.
And Michelle, run us out.
Well, if all the world comes to an end and Robert starts putting out my poetry on our radio show, I will be the first to apologize for how god-awful it is. But all of you have a wonderful, safe summer. If you're interested in being on the show, whatever your niche is, if it's related to dogs or pets, give us an email, and we'll be happy to set you up to be a guest on the show.
Live at dogworksradio.com, or make sure you find us on Facebook or Twitter. Just search Dog Works Radio. So on behalf of Sid Corpy and all the wonderful things she does, as well as Michelle at Denver Dog Works, she can help you out. 303-578-9881 is the number. We will talk to you very soon. Talk to you later. Goodbye.